This is the after party.
I'm an acupuncturist. When I was working with my patients, I had an 85% success rate. Not good enough for me. Because that meant 50% of my patients weren't getting what they were paying for. And that bothered me. So I went and I did research and I found out the relationship between the mind and the body, how that affected them. Because it didn't matter how I changed the acupuncture points, what other herbal formulas that I put together, they still couldn't get past a certain stage. It's like they kept hitting a wall. So that 15%, that research that I did, led me to working with the mind and the body and seeing that relationship. Also led me to develop my intuition to the point where I could see and sense exactly what was going on that made things go faster for me to find out, oh, this is the reason why you're having that. Because people that come and they start talking to you and they start telling you, because they're trying to figure out what's wrong. Mm-hmm. That's why they're there. You don't go to a doctor if nothing's wrong. So they've tried everything. They're trying to figure it out. They can't figure it out. And if I look at, let's say, what I might have learned from my textbooks, that wouldn't give me the answer either. Because most people, you know, your lives don't really fit into a textbook. We get a description and we get some kind of standard of care. But everybody doesn't fit that. So that led me to the mind-body connection. And then I started realizing the more and more I worked with people, my intuition, my insights became keener. It wasn't just that I went to the textbook and figured out patterns. It was like all of a sudden I'm like, oh, this is really what's going on with this person. This is, you know, and it's not even anything they told me. I'll just get, this is really what's happening with them. Mm-hmm. And then at first when I started hearing, this is really what's happening with this person, I would go, should I even say this to this person? Because it would sound so out there to me. Because I'm listening and I'm like, that doesn't even make any sense.
Wait a minute. So you can admit that the things that you say, they sound bizarre to you as well?
Very. Because my background is science and research. So I am very, you got to measure it, you got to prove it, you got to be able to verify it, you got to be able to replicate it or it doesn't exist. So I come from this very kind of square, kind of researchy, sciencey type of mindset, thinking, and all of that. That's why I told you the book we're reading frustrates me, because when you mention research, I'm like, where's the rest of the information about this research? So that was my frustration reading this book. Because I'm like, don't tease me. Like, you mentioned the research, but you didn't go into what it actually said.
Right.
So that's my background. So when I started receiving intuitive information from the patient laying there on the table, and I would say, it sounds like their liver is telling me, oh, she told you this, but this is what the real issue is. And that's how I started processing it when I was still first working with someone.
And this would sound bizarre to you.
It'll sound bizarre because it wouldn't fit anything they just told me.
Wait, so it didn't sound... So, okay. I want to make sure we're understanding. So for me, saying bizarre is just the whole thing of you saying what the liver just said.
Yeah.
For you saying bizarre...
On their liver issue. And then all of a sudden, their liver is spilling the tea. They're like, oh, no. It has nothing to do with what this person just said. And it's not that the person's lying. It's that they're unaware. They don't know themselves. They're trying to figure it out. So they're really, honestly, truthfully trying to find an answer to resolve this problem. So they have a bad lip. So then I'm working on...
No. What I'm saying is the bizarre. I'm sticking with the word bizarre because I want to make sure that what I'm saying is bizarre is what you're saying is bizarre.
Yeah.
So you don't think it's bizarre to say that a liver spoke to you.
Yeah.
You do.
Not anymore. When the first time,
then
it was bizarre.
Okay.
Now it's like routine almost.
You've accepted it.
Yeah, that's what's going on with them. It's, you know, you've done it for so many years, it becomes second nature. But the first time I was like, okay, I'm hearing this voice in my head and I'm listening and I can actually hear to the liver. Okay, this is going to make you laugh. Most of the time when I hear the person's body is speaking to me, that's why they call it medical intuition. it sounds like the person's voice. So if I was working with you and all of a sudden, let's say your heart starts to speak, or maybe you have a bad knee and that part of your body starts to speak, it sounds like your voice. The funniest one I ever had was this woman. And every time I would tell her, because people started hearing, oh, she could do this, I started having people come to my office to find out, well, what was really happening with them. So I had this lady, she was referred, and she came in and she knew what I did and she was all for it. And what was funny about it, the voice that her body spoke and sounded like a British butler. She was a Caucasian woman, but the voice sounded like a British man's voice. And I'm like, and I kept laughing. I would tell her what I'm hearing, and then I would giggle. And I was like, that is funny. Now, that was very bizarre. And then what was so funny about it, as she asked, she said, well, every time you told me something, Akia, you would giggle. And I said, yes, it was strange. Because I said, it sounded like whatever, whoever was narrating to me what was happening within your body and within your life, sound like a British butler. She looked at me, she said, yeah, she said, whenever I think about stuff, I hear a British man's voice. You know, like when you think about it, when you think, you're hearing your thoughts, you're listening to your thoughts, you're talking to yourself. Not verbally, but you're talking right to yourself here. Mm-hmm. She told me, and I was like, you hear a British man's voice? She said, yeah, that's what I hear in my head anytime I start thinking. But that's what I heard speaking, telling me about what was happening to her and why she was having this issue. So by doing that, I'm able to like bypass a lot of, you know, standard care stuff, medical stuff, like things that we've learned, textbook stuff. I'm able to bypass that, or what, you know, society might say, if you have this issue, this is probably what it is, like a kind of one size fits all energy. I'm able to bypass it and say, well, yeah, those things are the standard things, but this is really what's going on with you. Mm. And so when I say bizarre, at first I was like, this person didn't tell me nothing about this when they came in. It's not on their intake sheet. You know, I'm looking at it. Nothing's there about this. This is what their body is saying, what the real issue is really going on with this person. And at first I was like, should I even say anything? This person's going to look at me like I'm weird. And I would hear, yeah, tell them. And then I'll tell it to them and they'll say, oh yeah, that makes so much sense. And what I began to realize, because I also taught this to students, how to do medical intuition. The person would always go, oh yeah, yeah, that makes so much sense now. And it's almost like a relief will come over them and they'll have some kind of release will happen. And then they wouldn't have that issue anymore. And then I used to tell my students, because they wanted to learn how to do what I did. And I said, don't worry if the story sounds strange to you or bizarre. That's what I mean, bizarre, because it doesn't fit in what you're thinking.
Right.
I said, don't worry if it sounds that way, because it's not your story, it's their story.
Right.
So someone else's story will always sound strange to you.
Okay.
Does that, and the person's not aware of it. Maybe something that has happened when you were 5, maybe you made a decision. Something happened when you were 5, you made a decision. Your life is still running on that 5-year-old program.
Yes.
You don't even remember, because you were 5.
Yeah.
You don't even remember why you even put that in place.
Yeah.
So those are the type of things that I found out. It's like, okay, you're about 5 and then this happened. And then people talk, oh yeah, I remember something like that. Well, you made a decision at that time to, you know, your relationship to people and the world would be in this context because you are protecting yourself from whatever happened when you were 5. So every relationship, or if anything, people will come to me because all of a sudden something has triggered that whole pattern to come back in place, and they can't figure out, why am I going through this?
Right.
Those are the things I need to find out.
Okay.
Why did this happen? And this thing triggered it. It could have been a smell. It could have been somebody said something. Maybe you saw something. You heard a sound. It could be anything was the triggering event. And now your life is like going topsy-turvy and you don't know why.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Your gift, can you use your gift on yourself?
Not effectively. I can, but it's limited. It's like, okay, think about it. You can massage yourself.
Right.
But it's more effective if somebody else massages you.
Yeah, I can't massage all of my back.
But there is, you know, like I could massage my leg, I could, but it feels different. There's, because there's this exchange of energy. It's like the fact that someone has put this energy into it. And in, you know, like in the Bible, they talk about the witness and where two and three are gathered. You know, there's something about having that other person and that other person's energy and spirit there with you that makes it more effective than if I just did it by myself. And then you have bias if you're doing it by yourself. You know, because you already figure, I know what this is all about. And it has, like I say, it may have nothing to do with that. That's why I said it was bizarre, because what they came and told me was going on, what I'm hearing has nothing to do with anything that they mentioned all week.
Right.
So that's what I mean. So even your own bias, you can't see certain things if they're hidden or you're blinded to them.
That makes so much sense. I heard someone say that your gift is not for you. Actually, my pastor, Pastor Darius Daniels, said your gift is not. It helped me so much to be able to know that my gifting was not for me, that there's nothing wrong with me, that there are things that I do that I'm able to help people with. But I need help doing that myself, even though I can help someone amazingly. When I sit down to do it for myself, I don't get the same. So it, now you've added that
it's
with
much
the bias.
Yeah, it's much more effective when you have that interchange between you and someone else. Just like when you show up and let's say you're comforting someone, someone's going through something, they could like do affirmations, they could do, but it's not the same as if someone comes and tries to comfort you. There's a difference in the energy, the way it feels and all of that, that we need. And the thing with our society, we're so isolated now. We're so afraid of any kind of intimacy with each other. And I don't mean intimacy sexual. I mean just intimacy.
Yes.
You know, the caring for one another and all of that. We just got into society where we're like, everybody's suspicious of everybody, and you know, which is a really harsh place to be. So one of the things that I was given, you know, like I said, we talk about gifts, we're given different purposes to do so. I was given to be a teacher, be a healer. So I've done those things. When I was given creation, this was back around 2010, I started doing this work. When I was given that work to do, and then I was told that I was supposed to also teach people how to do this. So far I've taught a little bit over 100 people that I've taught to do this work. The other thing I was taught is that now I have to make it public. So that's part of the reason why I joined MMU, because I was like, okay, I have this gift, this calling, or this mission, I should say. It feels more like a mission at this point. I have this mission that I have to make it public. How do I make it public? I mean, I'm known in Orlando. I have taught people in that sphere, but I have to go outside of the pond and go into a bigger pond, which is the world. And how do I bring this to people now?
Right.
So I joined MMU specifically for that reason, because I knew this is what I need to get this word out to people, that this is available. So more people, we could serve more people. And then prior to joining MMU, I kept seeing the beginnings of a community, because it's one thing. Let's say you have a certain pattern with your money, and we clear that pattern up. But without the support of having others around you that's also moving in that direction with you, without that level of support and that community and all of that, it makes it harder for you to move forward. It makes it harder for you to advance and really reach out and serve on the level that you should be serving. And when we think about the fact that we have the gift of this internet, and one of the things that my, when I sit down and I, you know, it's I call it a band of angels. Some people say it's a spiritual guide, whatever. To me, I don't get really caught into semantics, but that inner guidance that I have and that I hear around me, they said, they created the internet because they want all of us to be able to connect with each other because we've got other things that need to be done.
Yes.
And they and I look at it and I said, well, we're using it for foolishness. Where there's nothing wrong with having fun, but, you know, the focus have been, you know, on anything but doing things that will move the consciousness of the planet and move us spiritually and elevate us upward. And they say this is really what they had put it there for us to be able to use this tool that we have for that. So what you're doing is a way of moving things forward, Mary. And you might not have thought of it that way, but the fact that you said, hey, I got out there, I got to get people out there. You're doing that because that's moving that there. So then people start seeing it. Oh, I don't have to clown myself. I don't have to, you know, strip and show my whole body. I don't have to do silly dances. I don't have to be, you know, unpaid entertainer. You know, I could actually do things that's going to be meaningful. And we're not saying that anything's wrong with any of those things. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that we have, you know how much power it is that at the push of a button, you could reach millions. You could reach everybody on this planet with a push of a button. You know the level of power that is. So, but we have not really processed it and look at it like, oh my God. We have, so if we're going to serve people, we have a tool that we could serve people so efficiently.
Yes.
And so that's one of the things that was downloaded to me. And I'm like, yeah, I have to see how this whole thing and how to, you know, so in the group that we're in the community, we're learning how to present ourselves publicly. We're learning how to do all of these things because that's one of the things that I've been asking for. I need to understand how to do these things and how to do them properly.
Yes.
Otherwise, it felt haphazard to me until I joined this community.
Yes. The morning meetup, David Shands has done something that I feel is absolutely spectacular. Not a word I use, but this spectacular. Yeah. Spectacular. You know, you go to the circus and it's like, oh my goodness, that's spectacular. They just did this. They just did that. I feel like every day I get something because I come with a high expectation of getting something. Now, every day I get a lot of information, but then I get that thing that I know, oh my goodness, I needed that for right now.
Yes.
So I'm so grateful to David Shands and the Morning Meet.
We're absolutely grateful to him and the community that he's created because I was told prior to joining the Morning Meetup that I was supposed to create a creation community. And I had no idea, well, what would that look like? How would we do that? And I looked at other programs that, you know, people, well, what they call it, a mastermind or some community. And I looked at it, but what I didn't see with them, they were so stringent.
Yeah.
You know, like you couldn't say this, you couldn't talk about this, you couldn't let people know what you did. You could, you know, there were so many rules and regulations. And I'm like, is this, I don't know if that's, and so when I came to the Morning Meetup, and I saw the way David allowed people to be free. Like, we wouldn't even have this happening right now if he didn't say, y'all need to talk with each other. Y'all need to collaborate with one another. Y'all need to, there's like 300 of you on this call. Y'all need to get to know one another. This is the point of having community. So the fact that he was so into pushing community, I'm getting more of an inkling, like, this is what the community should feel like.
Yes.
This is what the community should look like.
Yes.
This is, you know, so then it brought me back to, like, Akia, when you do stuff, you have a way that you love to accommodate people. You love to host people. You love to just make people feel good around you and all of that. So then all of a sudden, I felt this ease that, oh, the community would feel like my personality. Because what we get is David's personality.
This yes, we do. We get high energy first thing in the morning, high energy. The first thing we start out is accountability. He's like, look, you're in business. You're trying to do something. You have, you know, you have goals and aspirations. Let's break these things down into bite-sized, palatable little mini meals, and let's decide, what are you doing today to get there? What are you doing today? Just 2-3 things that you're doing today to move the needle forward in where you're going, your goals, your aspirations, because they can't just be goals and aspirations. You actually have to be taking action. So I feel as though there, he doesn't just express, you need to take action, need to take action, need to take action. He makes room for you to actually to create your plan, bite by bite, piece by piece, ingredient by ingredient. He brings the most amazing people to come and pour into us. Literally, like I'm sitting there thirsty and it just, it washes over me and I'm like, okay.
Absolutely.
That answered this. And now I know how to take these next 3 steps. I don't allow all the information to overwhelm me. I take it palatable. And then I go. And so I feel as though I grow every day. He keeps me focused on my goals. Going into that call every day with David Shands keeps me focused on what my goals are. And it also helps me to create and make them bigger because he's constantly growing my thinking towards it. Constantly growing my relationship with my business, in my business, my relationship with people. I know you because of him. Because of him, I know I haven't spoken with you, like we haven't been in tight communication since episode 8, but it's episode 23. All it took was a call and a text.
Yes, that was
and
it.
But sure. Why? Because we see each other every morning. We're not in, we're not talking just between us. We're talking with a group of people around the world that take time to get on a call and just learn more business thing, to become more business, but it's not even just business minded. He's shaping your character, your conduct, your commitment to doing the things that you need to do to be able to accomplish the purpose, the service that you said we provide. Your purpose is your service. It comes easy to
you. It brings you joy.
And brings you joy.
It makes you happy.
And makes you happy.
They, you know, one of the things, like I said, I hear, you know, I just listen, like people talk about, they get downloads. I get a lot of them. And I listen and they said, your purpose is your happiness. It's the thing that makes you happy. So not only are you serving, it's the thing that brings you joy. It's the thing that makes you happy. That's why some people figure, why would people pay me money? Because it makes me feel good to do this thing. So that's one of the things about the money and the purpose that it was like, that's why I had to do a class on that.
We're going back to the Bible. Your gift will make room for you. A gift is something that you enjoy. It's something that, it, I mean, it when you...
That's why it's a gift. We love getting gifts.
Right. Yeah. Brings a smile, you're elated, you're excited, you're like, oh my goodness. And that, you're so correct. That's how you should feel about your purpose. You should be bubbling over with joy in doing your purpose. And for me, stepping back, just for in looking at David, he just finished a podcast.
He's on his purpose.
And his purpose was just to serve everyone that was there and made sure that they left with an even higher awareness of what it is they were doing, why they were doing it, how to do it. Because this takes you, he's like, listen, if you just got one good thing, that that in itself, take that thing and work that thing so then you can go to the next thing. It your purpose.
Your
being your servant. I've never had
it. Energizes you. And it energizes you.
Yeah.
You know, because I could be tired. I could be like, my eyes are closing and I may get a call. Somebody might call me. It might be an emergency call and somebody needs my help. And I start doing my work with them. I start doing creation or I start doing my intuitive work with them to see what really is happening to them. And by the end of that call, I'm no longer sleepy. I'm no longer tired. I am energized.
Yeah.
So that's how you know your purpose. It makes you happy. It brings you joy, and you feel energy doing it. So
you revealed something very powerful, because you're saying that it brings you joy. It brings you energy. So you should be able to pinpoint when you're doing something just for the money.
Yeah.
Because it's a drag.
I remember doing something for the money. What was it again? And I was like, oh my God, if I have to do any more of this, I can't remember what the job was, because I've cleared so many patterns, but I remember being on the job and I was getting paid well. There was the opportunity to make really good money doing this job. But I was like, oh my God, if I have to do this for the rest of it, just shoot me already. That's how I felt. Like, it wasn't the money. So then you realize even that, you know, and that's one of the other 17 ways when you're doing things you hate, messes up your money. You know, like some people, you know, you wonder, and they're always complaining, I hate my job, and they go, and it's this drudgery. And that is not what God wanted you to experience. That this is not the reason you were put here. And people don't get it.
Yeah. And you're right. Yeah. There is a fear behind walking in your gifting.
Mm-hmm. There's a big fear. That's the whole thing about money and purpose. I remember, I'd have a graduating class, and I taught one of the graduating classes at the college, the acupuncture college. And I knew they were getting, you know, they were leaving, they would have to start their own businesses and so forth. So we've trained them in medicine, we've trained them in everything that they need to pass their license and exams and that kind of stuff. But now we didn't really train them in how to run a business. Like what we're reading on the morning meetup, we're learning that. David Shands is teaching us that. So that's the training that we're getting. But we're not taught that in medical school. So most doctors make the worst business, and they're usually not good with money. They make the worst business. They just make a lot of it, but they're really not good with it because they're not really taught that about money. So I would do a class talking to them about their next step when they leave. And I'll talk to them about the business aspect of the medicine. And they would sit there and they'll be stunned. And I'll say, well, how much are you going to charge for your services? And, you know, they'll just have an arbitrary number. I'll charge $35. I'll charge $50. I'll charge $75. And I'm like, well, how did you come to that's what you need to charge? And they're like, well, they just figured, well, people won't be upset if I say $75, or, you know, it's like they had this weird thinking. And I said, okay, why would you charge? And I told them what I charge, which was like double or triple what they wanted to charge. And they'll go like, oh my God, you charge that much?
Wait a minute. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Did you, when you first started charging, how mm-hmm. did you feel?
I felt fine. I had no issue about charging for my service. Okay, let me tell you what I did. When I was an intern, we had to do a certain number of patients. You know, like that was the regular, you know, in order to get your license, you have to hit whether it was 200, 300, 400. I can't remember what my number was. But I said, when I hit that number, my next person was going to pay me. That was while I was an intern. I was like, all this free labor and all, cool, I'm learning a lot. But this next person, the next time I stick a needle in somebody's body, they're paying me to do that. So I had no issue around charging the services at all. And I did. I stopped. I gave all my patients to my classmates who were short on patients. I gave them all my patients, and I just stayed in the herbal pharmacy, and I made everybody formulas because I really wanted to hone in on that skill even more. So my entire last semester of school, I treated nobody.
Wow.
Because my next patient that walked, that I put in me, was going to pay me. I had made up my mind that's how it was going to be.
Okay.
So I never had that issue with charging for services.
Okay.
But when the students would ask me, they said, oh my God, you charge that much? How do you even ask the person? And I said, well, at the end of the treatment, I just say, would you like to pay with a check, cash, or credit card? That's it. I mean, this is something that we do every single day. We go into the store, You pay for things. We have these transactions all the time. So why should it be doing any different when it's something that you're doing? That makes no sense. And the person would look at you odd, like you just did a service. They're used to paying for things.
Can I say
so why
that?
Why do they not want to pay you?
That
this is something going on within you, not the person you're treating.
But most people, I find that when most people start their businesses, they go in their small sphere of people that they know.
Mm-hmm.
When their product service in this world is to be opened up to the world.
Yes.
Because more times than not, where you're actually going
to rejection.
To be seen,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where you're actually going to be accepted, where your value is actually going to be needed, is outside of.
And part of the other 17 ways is fear of success and fear of rejection. Fear mm-hmm. of failure and rejection and fear of success. That is, and I didn't have that going into business because to me, business just felt logical. It's like, I pay, if I want shoes, I got to pay for it. If I want groceries, I got to pay for it. So why wouldn't somebody want to pay me? That was just how my logical mind worked. But some people, they don't feel, or with women, like we talk about women, they will undercharge. And because they're taught that you're not supposed to have money. It's like something that has gone on for millennia with women.
And the thing is,
thousands of years of women not being able to handle money. And then in the last 50 years, they're handling money.
Yeah.
They have a weird relationship to money. So women undervalue and undercharge all the time. So when I would see females, like, guys will charge. Like, okay, a guy would have a beat up old car. And you'll say, well, how much you want for the car? He'll tell you, $3,000, they got this system in it. He'll tell you, $3,000, some beat up old car, like what we call hoopty, right? He'll charge a lot for that. You ask a woman the same question. She's like, I don't know, like $1,000, maybe $900. That's how women will approach it because of the difference in how we are taught about money.
Yeah.
You know, our roles toward money, whether you're a male or female. So just by being a man or a woman, you have a different experience and you have a different relationship to money.
You said it. Our roles towards money, because I feel as though women, let's see, I'm just going to pick one thing that women do. I'm going to give an example. I literally joked with someone and said, I just did all of this, so I know you're paying for lunch. And he literally said, wait a minute, if I'm paying for lunch, you know what you're going to have to do. And I'm like, wait, how does that lunch equate mm-hmm. to an intimate, I would say the way he was saying, transaction? You can't yeah. do that with me. But how do you equate
because men are taught your interaction, because men do not really, and this is just something I observed just for life. Men are not really interested in relationships with women unless it's food and sex. Let's just call it what it is.
You said what and what?
Food and sex.
Food and sex.
Food and sex. And there was a cartoon, I'll tell you the cartoon, and it was so true because that's psychologically what they think. So men are interested in relationship with other men because they measure themselves against other men. They measure their success within themselves against other. They don't measure those things against women, right? Mm-hmm. And if you have a woman that's doing that, she's out of her place. Who does she think she is? She's trying to be a man. You get all of that. So that's where that comes from, because men, you know, men get their admiration, you're successful based on how they measure up to other men.
Yes.
So they're always want to be in more relationships. So women, we're thinking, oh, we're doing this, this, and this. And the guys, no, he doesn't look at us from that angle because they're taught from their small. Women have, you know, they feed you, take care of you. And, you know, they're not your mom, you have sex or
right.
your sister, right?
Right?
You have sex with them. That's the relationship. So they're taught very early that's how you deal with a woman. So it isn't odd for him to think that.
Right.
Because the culture and everything has told him that this is the relationship you have with this person because she's a woman. Whereas if it's another man, he'll be like, yeah, let's hang out together. Let's talk about this. Let's do this. I'm doing. So men are always, you know, like, I don't want to say, but they measure the D with each other. They're always D measuring with each other. That's where that comes from. Mm-hmm. So it's always that with other men, whether it's competition or whatever, it's towards other men. It's not towards women.
Right.
Yeah. So
that's why they'll hang. They like to. That's why, I'm sorry. So that's why they like to hang out with them and just, oh, I'm going to hang out with my boys.
Exactly.
Something's going on. I need to talk with my boys.
Mm-hmm.
Always my boys. My boy's kid is having a party. Let me get there. Well, wait, you didn't come to your own kid's party or you didn't.
I got to support my boy. Yeah.
Well, you own, but you.
It's like a whole different, like they said, what men are from Mars, women from, it's a whole nother world.
Yeah.
And you start looking at people's worldview because what I not only study, but I observe. So I just observe. It's not what people say or what we tell. It's supposed to be this way. I just observe. Oh, okay, you say that, but what are you actually doing? So I just sit back and I observe and I say, oh, it's not relationship with women that are important to men. It's the relationship with other men. Now, the relationship to men are important to women because men was your source of survival for thousands of years. You know, you would put up with all types of stuff. You know, he could be anything, but it meant that my child would be able to survive and live and thrive. And as long as I'm attached to this man. And that's why, you know, even in politics, you look at it and they say, well, women are voting against this, but it doesn't really serve the purpose of women or serve the advancement of women. But the relationship and the support and security of being attached to the male is more important than some feminine or female thing. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why that decision, because then that means that my child get to have these other privileges or resources. That means that my family get to have certain privileges and status and resources if I attach myself to the man. It doesn't help me attaching myself to the women that have no power. So that's where all of that. So that's why when people say they vote against their own interests, that's the reason why. Because I look and I say, oh, that's curious. I wonder why. And then I start to observe and I say, oh, yeah. Then if you have to make that decision, it's going to be your kids, your household, and all of that is way more important than some sisterhood thing. If it comes down to that.
You are correct. Mm-hmm. You are correct. Yet again, my mind, ma'am, stretched.
Yeah.
My mind.
Well, people don't think about that, but the reason why I think about all these things, so people come to me and they have all these issues, and then I have to find out what's the cause of them having that particular issue or symptom or disease or whatever it is. So I have to look at like a wide swath of what's going on. So it's not just the person, what's happening in their environment, what's going on around them. What's been going on through their bloodlines and their genetics, you know, what's happening with their body, what are they eating? I have to take in a whole lot of factors.
Right.
And that's why the intuition helps, because if I have to go each one with my mind, it'll take forever. Mm-hmm. So that's why I am really glad that I was able to, you know, like go like a laser, you know, like the little missiles that can find things. I could go right to it with intuition.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, because it's so much. It could be anything. You know, somebody walks in the door, it could be anything is the reason why they're having a problem.
Yes. Yes. Your intuition is for me, unmatched. I've never met anyone with the depth and height of the gifting that you have.
Thank you.
I'm very honored even for you to take the time to have these conversations with me. That's why I was so honored. I'm like, she's back. Yeah. She's back.
That is, but you know what's interesting? Yeah, because over the years, because mine was out of necessity. I had to find out what was going on with my patient and how I could help them. And I went from 85% to a 95% success rate. With people healing, because it was always, why are they not healing? I don't understand why they're not healing. So I went from that to that. And the 5% is, I realize, is things that's out of my scope. They need another practitioner. They need another form of treatment. What I have to give them is not what they need. So that's the 5% that I can't touch.
Now I respect you even more because you're saying that, listen, I'm not saying that 100% of everything. You can admit where you're finding this isn't, I can't help you.
If someone has a severe infection, no. If someone got in a car accident, they have major trauma, or maybe they need surgery, they have a tumor, they have something else going on that's outside of my scope, they need to go there. So I'm not going to sit there and take their money and tell them, no, come to me. And I'm going to, no, you need to go have surgery. You know, what's going on with you is serious. You need to go see the doctor right away. You might need chemo. You know, it's like things like, I wouldn't say to them they need chemo, of course.
Right.
You need a lab test and all of that. But intuitively, I might pick up, like I had someone call me from New York, and she did everything natural. She ate natural, did everything. She did colonics for a living. That was her job. She did the whole alkaline water before alkaline water was a thing. She was doing all of this stuff. And she calls me on the phone. And, you know, and she's telling me that she's having a swollen abdomen. It won't go down. And the first word I hear is like, oh my God, she got cancer. That's the thought that popped in my head. And she's calling me to tell her, well, what's happening? So ethically, I can't say to someone on the phone, you've got cancer.
Right.
So I said, you need to go to the doctor. This sounds serious. You need to go. Because, you know, a lot of those people who do all that natural stuff, they don't need like to go to the Western doctor. That's part of their whole makeup. I said, you need to go to the doctor. Find out what's happening with you. Even though I'm already hearing she has that, she calls me back 2 days later. She goes to the doctor. She's upset with the doctor because they told her she had cancer. But then she's reading the report, and the report doesn't necessarily say you have cancer. It said the findings looks like, you know, they put in a kind of vague terminology because they're doing that for their own protection, for not getting sued and malpractice and stuff. So she's going through the fine print of the wording, but it does say cancer on her report.
Right.
And she was unfortunately poor, you know, lovely woman. She only lasted 2 months because she was very resistant to even dealing with the fact that that's what was wrong with her.
Right.
But as soon as I just heard she got cancer, like real loud, she got cancer.
Right.
I was like, oh my God. But I can't say it ethically. No, you need to go to your doctor. You need to find out what's going on. You need to go through the proper procedures and protocols and all of that. Because number one, it also protects me.
Right.
You know, as a practitioner. Yeah, but that's one of the things that I know is that a lot of times people just have a hard time, you know, dealing with different things going on in their life. And me, with my intuition, I always find a way to tell it to people in a way that they could hear.
Right.
You know, so, and don't think just because I'm saying to you, oh, you need to go to your doctor means you got something that serious. That's not what I'm saying. It could be like, you need to go get a checkup, or you're a little bit run down. You may need some vitamins or something. You need blood work done. You know, it could be anything like that. But that's why I said that 5% is not something that I do.
Right.
And I realized that, but that 95%, well, I felt good that I said 95% of the people that come and see me, I could truly help them because they're paying me for that work. So right. I feel better that I am actually honoring the promise that I make to them when they come and see me.
Honoring the promise that I make to them when they come see me.
Yeah.
That is not a great statement to live by, to serve by.
It's ethics. Yeah. I'll boycott the heck out of a store if I go there or a restaurant. You did not give me what I paid for. I'm like, that's my pet peeve. Just I don't care how much it costs. It's not even a price issue for me. I don't care what it costs. Just give me what I paid for.
Yes.
And it's good.
Yes.
So I feel that if I'm not doing that for any client or any patient, I don't feel good about it. I just want to make sure that my promise of the contract with you is when you come and see me, you expect to get these results. And if I don't deliver them, it bothers me.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't want anything to be bothering you.
Yes.
Oh, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for staying for the after party. Is the after party.
Yeah.
Thank you